When you stand on the shore and look out over any of the Great Lakes, ever ask yourself, wonder what's below the surface? What might you encounter as you swim, scuba dive, or fish? Well, there's no better person to shine a light on just what's in the Great Lakes than David Jude. He's a research scientist emeritus at the School of Natural Resources and Environment at the University of Michigan. Dave, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Overall, which of the Great Lakes is the most populated and the least populated?
Oh, the least populated, of course, is Lake Superior. And we see that reflected in the kinds of changes that have gone on. And probably the most affected would be Lake Erie and Lake Ontario, because that's sort of the route where the Europeans came in. And so that's where the most people populated that area. And that's where the most damage and also effects have occurred as well.
What about as far as underwater life population?
Well, that's a big question. It depends upon what lake you talk about. And again, we made the distinction between Superior and Erie. And Erie is by far has the most species of fish and is also the most productive. It's said that the other four lakes equal the catch that you would get from Lake Erie. And, of course, Lake Erie is shallow. And it also has an interesting characteristic in that it's got three different basins, the shallow western basin and the central basin and then the eastern basin. And as a result of that, you've got a high diversity of habitat. You've got rivers, you've got bays, you've got a lot of aquatic plants, you've got reefs. And diversity of habitat begets diversity in fish populations as well. So that has the highest diversity of fish in Lake Erie. And then the least is Lake Superior because it's so cold and so deep.
So you have to be a very hardy fish.
Yes,
to make it
and evolve for that sort of habitat, right?
Well, if you can, I'd like to have you take us on an underwater tour of the Great Lakes. Let's say I am swimming. I'll start in Lake Erie and a fish swims by. What type would it most likely be?
Wow. I would have to draw on my experience at South Bass Island. I spent a lot of time there. And we used to seine regularly a place called Alligator Bar. And it's a little rocky reef that runs out from the shoreline. And if you were wading around in that area, the most probably abundant fish that you'd see right now are round gobies. And I don't know if you're familiar with those or not, but they're an exotic species from Russia that came in 1990.
Oh, so they're invasive.
Yes, invasive species. And I happened to be the first one to collect them back in 1990. I was doing a study on the St. Clair River. And I picked up this fish and I said, well, I haven't seen a fish like this before. And I took it over to the museum and showed it to Jerry Smith. And he said, it's a goby. Where did you get that? And the family gobiidae is not present in North America, needless to say, the Great Lakes either. So it was a big surprise to him. And so since then, they've proliferated, and they're found in all five of the Great Lakes right now. So
how'd they get here?
Ballast water ships. You know,
hitching a ride.
Nemesis of ballast water ships, yes. And so they would make up about 60% of the catch. So probably 60% of the fish you would run into if you were on Alligator Bar swimming there would be round gobies. It's a nice vegetated area. So there's a lot of aquatic plants there too. So probably you'd see yellow perch, which people all have heard about. And there's a lot of gizzard shad. And you would probably see brook silversides and a lot of bass. There's two different species of bass, the largemouth bass and the smallmouth bass there. So you'd see a lot of those. And usually in these nearshore zones, they're small fish. They're usually young of the year fish. A lot of those are present. So depending upon, you know, whether there was a good hatch or not, you might see a few alewives swimming around as well. So that's what you would encounter if you were in Lake Erie.
And let's head up to Lake Huron.
Well, Lake Huron, of course, is less productive than Lake Erie. And I haven't had a lot of experience in Lake Huron, but I would expect a lot fewer species of fish. Probably if you were out in the water, you would run into spot-tail shiners, which is one of the common shiners that's on the bottom. And recently, what has happened in Lake Huron, and it's a dramatic change that's gone on there, is that with the introduction of the quagga mussels, we've had what we call a trophic cascade going on there. And the quagga and the zebra mussels, when they came in, filter the water of the algae. They remove algae from the water. And so if you look at chlorophyll A, which is an indication of the amount of algae in the water, the chlorophyll A in Lake Huron is less than in Lake Superior. So Lake Huron is essentially turning into Lake Superior. So it's very what we call oligotrophic, very low in nutrients right now. And as a result of that, this is a kind of a long story to get to my point, but the result of that is the alewife population, which of course is the food for salmon, declined to the point where they're almost extinct in Lake Huron. And as a result of that, the alewife eat the larvae of any fish, any of our native species that have pelagic larvae. And by that, I mean planktonic floating in the top. And alewife go along and they filter the water and they'll eat the larval form. So we saw a big change in a number of species, and one of those is emerald shiners. So if you go to Lake Huron and in the water, there are tremendous numbers of emerald shiners in the water now. And that was the first species that declined when alewife first came in. The alewife are out, and now we're seeing a return of not only emerald shiners, but other species that had pelagic larvae, like walleyes in Saginaw Bay, spectacular increase. Lake trout are doing a lot better because of that, and lake herring, which is a kind of an endangered species in Lake Huron. Those fish are also doing a lot better because of the decline in alewife.
What a lesson in cause and effect.
Yeah, it's really dramatic. So that would be a couple of the species you would run into. I would imagine you might run into a few round gobies there, and you might run into a few rainbow smelt, although they're fairly rare in that area as well. So that would be kind of what you'd find in the nearshore zone if you were out there wading.
Let's not overlook poor old Lake Ontario. We tend to not think of Lake Ontario as much as we do some of the others.
Yeah. Well, Lake Ontario is different, of course, than all four of the other ones because it has access to the ocean. And as a result of that, early on, they had Atlantic salmon, and which was unique to the Great Lakes. And the sea lamprey got in there early on because they came in from the ocean. So the species complex in Lake Ontario is a lot different, and it's also very productive. It's, you know, it's similar to Lake Erie. And so you would find species probably similar to what we saw in Lake Erie, but not quite as much. Probably you would get round gobies, you would get gizzard shad, probably spot-tail shiners, and also a number of others, maybe yellow perch. And also there's another bass called the and it's not a true bass. It's called the white perch, and it's an exotic species as well. And so you probably would run into a bunch of those as well if you were in the nearshore zone in Lake Ontario.
And for so many people in Michigan, summer in Michigan means the West Coast, West Michigan, and Lake Michigan. So what might we find there?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that. One of the things I do regularly is I monitor what's happening in the nearshore zone because we're very concerned about what the young of the year alewife are doing and also what the yellow perch are doing. Mm-hmm. And you probably heard that the yellow perch population has been in trouble in Lake Michigan since the quagga and zebra mussels came in for the same reasons I mentioned to you.
That they were in trouble in Huron.
They eat the larvae of the yellow perch, so their populations are reduced. And they also provide a bottleneck for early produced young of the year larval forms because they are relying on zooplankton. And zooplankton eat algae. And now that the algae is down, the zooplankton populations are down, which is one of the main foods for yellow perch. So when I do my seining, I'm looking for what the size of the yellow perch is in late August. You know, how are they growing? Did they do well this year? And the number, abundance. So I do a standard kind of toe. And so then I can look over time and see how those numbers have changed. And it's really dramatically low considering I used to get maybe 100 young of the year yellow perch in some of my seine hauls. And I got in 6 seine hauls last year, I got 2 yellow perch. And not only were they not very abundant, but they're very small. So that means that they're probably not going to even survive. So the population of Lake Michigan is really being stressed by yellow perch. So if you were a swimmer at South Haven and were in the area that I was seining, we would get
When you say seining, what does that mean?
Oh, that's dragging a net along the bottom. You know, if you took a volleyball net and made the mesh real small and then pulled it along the shoreline.
See what you can scoop up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, scooping up fish. So if you were there and saw the catch that we made last year, you would see spot-tail shiners again, fairly common. You would see maybe a couple round gobies because they're all along the shoreline now. And we got a few yellow perch, those real scrawny ones. And we got a fairly large number of alewives. And these were all young-of-the-year alewives. And again, compared to what, you know, we usually we see alewives are about an inch, maybe an inch and a half long. by the end of the year. And they spawn early in June and July, depending upon the temperatures and, you know, the duration of spawning. And then at the end of the year when I seine them, usually they're in that range. And if they don't make a certain size, and the same thing is true with the yellow perch, they will die over winter because they have to go out there with all the fat reserves they generate in the growing season. And a lot of these alewives that I was getting were very small. Maybe they were hatched in late July and maybe even early August. And as a result of that, I suspect that a lot of those alewives are dying too. And as I indicated, the population of alewives in Lake Huron is essentially extinct, and Lake Michigan is actually following in that pathway. The populations of alewife, according to USGS trawls, are lower or equal to the lowest levels in 1973 when they first started monitoring for alewives in Lake Michigan. So Lake Michigan is in a kind of a precarious position now. At some point, we might see a decline in the alewives. We might see a rebound, but I suspect decline is what we're going to see. And as a result of that, we might see the same sort of pattern we saw in Lake Huron, in that we might see the salmon population decline as well.
Finally, Superior. Hardy fish up there in Superior.
Well, it's interesting. I like to look for agates. And so I've been up in Lake Superior a few times, wading around in the water, in the mm-hmm. cold water. And I found a lake herring, which is one of the species that's in Lake Superior, to the call of loons in the background, I might add, which is very aesthetically pleasing. And I also saw two other species, and I I think one was a long-nosed dace, which is a minnow-like species that lives in rocks. And, of course, I was out in the rocks, and so they tend to live in the crevices in the rocks. And I've seen them also in places on the Leelanau Peninsula. For example, Peterson Park, there's a real rocky area there, and I've seen long-nosed mm-hmm. dace there as well. And I think the other species I saw was emerald shiners in Lake Superior. So, again, very sparse number of species, and they were very rare. I mean, I spent a lot of time on the shoreline, and I rarely see fish there. But again, I didn't sample it with any nets, right. So I suspect if I did that, I would have gotten more.
What are your biggest concerns for underwater life in all of the Great Lakes? We certainly hear a lot of headlines about Asian carp.
Well, a couple of things I guess I'm concerned about. Invasive species is obviously the number one problem we've seen. The quagga mussel, as I indicated, has just had a dramatic impact on at least four of the Great Lakes. They're not in Lake Superior, or not very abundant in Lake Superior because the calcium levels are so low. And I read a paper that suggested that the benthos, which are the bottom-dwelling organisms in Lake Michigan, of which quagga mussels are a part, 90% of the benthos now is quagga mussels, 90%. So we're seeing these impacts I mentioned to you. I always like to think about a terrestrial ecosystem. We've got the sun, the grass, the cows, and then we go to McDonald's. Well, in the Great Lakes, we've got what I call aquatic cows. And the aquatic cows that eat the algae are two groups, and that's the zooplankton, which I mentioned to you mm-hmm. are important for early life history of fish. And the other ones are called diaparia, and these are little bottom-dwelling benthic organisms, and they go around the bottom and sweep up the algae that drifts to the bottom. Both of these groups are critical food for fish. You name a fish, and I'll tell you what size eats either zooplankton or diaparia. Now we've seen a tremendous decline in zooplankton. They've gone down maybe to 20% of what they were, and the diaparia have gone from 10,000 per square meter to 5 or 6 or 0 per square meter. And so the fish have had to adjust to this, and as a result, we saw this big change. So invasive species would seem to me right now to be the, one dramatic impact that's going on in at least three of the Great Lakes, Ontario, Michigan, and Huron. And, of course, Erie has been affected, but it's very productive, so we haven't seen the dramatic changes there that we saw in the other Great Lakes.
Fascinating as we think about what's teeming there under the water. David Jude is a research scientist emeritus at the University of Michigan School of Natural Resources and Environment. Thanks for the insights. We will be looking at our lakes with fresh eyes.
Fish on!